part of our agenda this evening is the widening gap between the way the world is and the way it could be if the benefits of science were optimally channeled. The benefits are actually distributed unfairly. For many of the world's people, they're outweighed by looming environmental threats. And biotechnology, though it has amazing potential, has a nightmarish downside as well. But before looking forward, I'd like to contrast our present concerns with those of the mid-20th century. The science that then loomed largest was physics, especially nuclear physics. The agenda is now far broader, dominated by environmental and biomedical issues. Moreover, there's another big change since the 1950s. Pivotal decisions on nuclear weapons and nuclear power were then made with a quite indefensible degree of secrecy. There's still a long way to go before policy making is as open as it should be, but there's a gratifying opening up that's taken place since the 50s and 60s. At that time, government scientists were, perhaps unthinkingly, fueling the arms race. Solly Zuckerman, writing with the wisdom of hindsight and old age, wrote, "Most innovations came from scientists in the weapons labs. The military were then persuaded that these innovations were needed, and the arms race ratcheted up an extra notch, leaving both sides less secure than before." But in the Cold War era, some nuclear scientists who'd worked at Los Alamos set a fine example. Those like Joseph Rotblat, who set up the Pugwash conferences, for instance. They didn't say that they were just scientists doing their job and that the use made of their work was up to politicians. They campaigned forcefully for nuclear arms control. And I think these scientists should be our model today. We think there's something odd if parents don't care what happens to their children, even if it's beyond their control. Likewise, even the purest curiosity-driven scientists should care what happens to their work. They should welcome benign applications of their ideas and warn against and resist dangerous or threatening spin-offs. All policy decisions with a scientific dimension should be the outcome of broad debate. But this debate won't rise above the level of tabloid sloganizing without an informed public. And scientists can help to ensure this. If they have special interests or potential biases, these should be declared, so we can apply an appropriate correction or discount factor to what they say. But they are all expert witnesses, as it were, and should engage in dialogue with the wider public, emphasizing the risks and uncertainties, as well as what we have learned. But in the actual decisions, scientists' views, of course, carry no special weight. Indeed, the main impediment to spreading the benefits of science is economic and political. In our grossly unequal world, it's more profitable to provide luxuries for the rich than necessities for the poor. And what's required here is not more science, but either drastic redistribution or governmental subsidies or some other social science innovation. What about the downsides and risks of new science and technology? This is not an anti-science question. In fact, those who are best informed about science tend to be the most concerned about the potential dangers. There are surely many potential applications, human cloning, GMOs and the rest, where regulation and control will be called for. Some people would accept the need to control or redirect the applications of science, but claim nonetheless that pure research should be left untrammeled. But that's simplistic. There's no sharp demarcation between the two. Science is molded by technology and society just as much as vice versa. Let me take examples just from academic fields I'm involved in. The huge accelerators used by particle physicists wouldn't have been funded had not physicists achieved a lot of governmental clout after World War II. detectors for faint radiation used by astronomers were devised first for the military and now for consumer electronics. And space science rides along on a huge program that was driven by superpower rivalry in the Cold War era. Because of extraneous factors like this, and you could come up with a similar list in other scientific fields, the deployment of effort and resources along the scientific frontiers is suboptimal. Some areas deserve more encouragement and effort. Environmental researches, tropical diseases, renewable energy sources, biodiversity studies, and so forth. I think that will be agreed. But I want to broach a more controversial issue. Are there areas of academic research, the kind of science done in university laboratories, that the wider public should try to hold back? To some extent, the answer is yes. It's yes if the work involves experiments on humans or animals to which there are ethical objections, or if the experiments seem repulsive to most of us, the yuck factor, as Brian Appleyard termed it, and yes if the experiments themselves pose a risk, dangerous pathogens that might escape, or physicists probing unknown extremes of energy, for instance. But what if the experiment seems okay, but it seems that the outcome will realistically be mischievously and damagingly applied? I personally think that the answer is yes here too. Just as a field of pure science merits enhanced strategic funding if foresight exercises suggest it might have promising spin-off, so we might perhaps direct funds away from a field which, though interesting, might lead to problematic applications. Of course, such decisions couldn't stop a line of research. They could merely decelerate it, because you can't control scientists' thoughts and speculations, nor how private benefactors choose to use their resources. I've emphasized that scientists shouldn't carry more weight than other citizens in decisions on how science is applied. But there are some issues, one in particular, where specialists should be heeded. They're much the best place to judge whether a problem is soluble. Some scientific problems are obviously important, but not yet ripe for a frontal attack, and it's then no good throwing money at them. Nixon's war on cancer, for instance, was premature. Untargeted fundamental research was a better bet. Indeed, one lesson of the past is that unchanneled curiosity can engender colossal payoffs that are quite unpredictable. In the 19th century, X-rays weren't the outcome of a crash medical program to see through flesh, but of an accidental discovery by a physicist. And most 20th century technology is the outcome of research pursued for motives of curiosity. That's incidentally why foresight exercises could have a downside if they put a kind of funding blight on everything that isn't highlighted. I want to close with a pessimistic thought. 21st century technology confronts us with many depressing prospects: nuclear proliferation, environmental degradation, and so forth. But one in particular gives me nightmares. It's what might happen when thousands, even millions of individuals, have the technical capability to work in biotechnology. Devastation could then be caused by a single fanatic or a weirdo with the mindset of the kind of people who now design computer viruses, even by someone who's merely incompetent rather than malign. And there are other threats that are growing, like bioterrorism. Even if all nations impose strict controls, the chances of effective enforcement worldwide are no better than in the case of the drug laws. Even a single infringement by one person could trigger widespread disaster. A culture of openness would render small-scale clandestine projects harder to conceal, but it will be hard to stop such a threat from growing, certainly unless we can reduce the blatant inequities that fuel the grievances of the disaffected. We need to redirect technology in environmentally benign directions. We need to ensure that globalization doesn't just benefit the rich countries. Aiming at this worthy goal for the wrong reason is better than not aiming at it at all. Thank you.